Welcome back to Made in March. Today is Thursday, April 1st. So first and foremost, happy April Fool's Day to everyone out there. And we are here about a day and a half to 2 days after the conclusion of the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight rounds. So a little bit of a delay. We apologize for that. And we're going to recap all those games. But before we get into that, there's actually a lot of big news that has happened since, I guess, the conclusion of those rounds. A lot of, like, new coaching news. Obviously, a week ago, Alex, your Marquette Golden Eagles, they got Shaka Smart as their new head coach. As time has passed, has your thoughts evolved on that at all?
I mean, I liked it when they initially made the hire. My number one choice was probably Porter Moser, that being Loyola's coach. But I love Shaka. I think he'll build a great culture at Marquette. Hopefully he can get back to his winning ways like he did early in his career. I know a lot of people are saying, obviously, Marquette hasn't been in the tournament in 7 years, and or haven't gotten a tournament win in 7 years, and Shaka hasn't also gotten a win in 8 years, I think. But I'm still loving the hire. You know, it's not as big of a program as Texas, so hopefully he can still bring in the big recruits and compete in the Big East.
Yeah, I mean, I've been critical of Shaka in the past, but it was obvious Marquette needed a change. And as far as hires were, Shaka was one of the best options out there, so I'm with you there. But there are some even bigger news than that by a long shot. I mean, we'll just get right into it here. Roy Williams, head coach of North Carolina for, not of North Carolina for 48 years, but I believe he was a college basketball head coach for 48 years. North Carolina for a big majority of that, retires. You know, obviously he was getting older, so you can't say it was out of the blue, but at the same time, it kind of was. Like, I wouldn't say anyone was expecting that. Absolute class act. Like, he'll be missed in college basketball. You never really heard a bad word said about Roy Williams.
No, not at all. And the things he did for UNC was incredible on and off the court. And so you hate to see him retire, but this brings in the opportunity for a new face. And I know you've been doing a little bit of research on possible new coaches.
I have, because this is my take here. We were having a little off-air, you know, conversation about this. Is this the best coaching job in all of college basketball, given North Carolina's storied history and, you know, history to this day?
I mean, I would probably say Duke, but I think it's interchangeable between Duke and North Carolina.
Duke and UNC have got to be 1 and 2, or at least 1, 2, and 3 if you want to throw in Kansas. I guess Kentucky as well. But, you know, one of the best jobs in the business. And, you know, there are some names being thrown out there to take a spot. There are two in-house guys. I don't have their names on the top of my head. I'd say there's a 75% chance one of those two guys gets it.
I mean, yeah, they've been coaching under Roy for a long time. They know the system the best.
I think the assistant's been there like 12 years.
Yeah.
So you got to think that they get it. But some other names that were thrown out, we'll do a little temperature check on this. Jerry Stackhouse, obviously everyone knows who Jerry Stackhouse is. He had a very storied basketball career, played at North Carolina, was a legend there. And he's been head coach at Vanderbilt the past 2 years, who, let's be real, Vanderbilt's kind of stunk the past few years.
No bueno.
Do you think Jerry Stackhouse has a chance? I mean, there's been a lot of buzz. He was trending on Twitter today.
I mean, I guess he has a chance. I know a lot of teams like to hire, like, former alums, and especially people who have had success in basketball.
Like a Penny Hardaway, playing. Stuff like that.
But I don't know. He's coached at Vandy for 2 years. Vandy obviously hasn't done anything really, but I guess they're kind of going with the whole Penny Hardaway.
Yeah, there. And I mean, Vanderbilt's had some players as well. Like, I believe last year's NBA draft, they had, like, two or three guys get drafted.
Yeah, they had Aaron Nesmith, I think his name was.
They haven't done anything with him. So I don't know if that's the hire to go with. But he's been drawing some buzz. And there's some more long shot options that we'll see what you're thinking. Jay Wright of Villanova. No?
I just don't really see Jay Wright leaving Villanova.
I don't think there's any reason for him to be honest. Villanova's an incredible program in and of itself, and that's the same for the next name I was going to bring up, Mark Few.
And I think Few's almost more unlikely to go to UNC.
Yeah,
than,
why would he leave Zags?
Than Jay would.
Zags and are plus, like a new blood.
Plus, Mark Few's had multiple opportunities to leave to go to a bigger program, I guess, and he just hasn't. He wants to stay with the Zags and build that program.
This one is
more.
Still a long shot, but I at least thought it was interesting. It's the last name I'll bring up here. Nate Oates. He was a head coach of Buffalo. This was his second year at Alabama. He brought him to the Sweet 16. They were a 2 seed.
I mean, Nate Oates is a great coach. I don't know if he's leaving after 2 years at Alabama, especially since he's kind of built that program as like a kind of running three-point shooting team. I don't know if that necessarily fits what North Carolina wants to do, but I guess they could always change.
Yeah, I don't really see it either, but when you say he kind of built that program, he also built Buffalo's program, And he told the players that they were going to become like the new Gonzaga and he was never going to leave. And what did he do the second he got the chance? He bolted. So if they offered him the job, I have a hard time believing that Nate Oates would turn it down. But let's be real. They're going to probably stick with someone in-house. That's kind of a North Carolina thing to do. And honestly, it's probably going to work out better than any of those would.
Yeah, and then just to name a few other guys that aren't really getting much buzz for this job but could be hired, I think. Porter Moser of Loyola, going to be a big one. He's definitely going to get a job, I think, at a bigger school. And then two guys who are not coaching right now, John Beilein and Thad Matta. Those guys could come back.
And Beilein should be coaching. I think he 100% should be.
And I'm not sure where Beilein's head at, but I think I heard Thad Matta's waiting for the Butler job to open up.
Interesting. Okay. And then, like, literally 2 hours after that, another absolute bombshell dropped. And once again, this all happened on April Fool's Day. So I was like an expert fact checker, basically, today. Chris Beard left Texas Tech and is now taking the head coaching position at Texas. In-state rivalry, same division. Thoughts?
I mean, I don't really know what to say. I mean, he's going to his rival school.
Yeah.
How many years was he at Texas Tech?
Three or four. Because before that, he was at Arkansas Little Rock.
Yeah.
So he's ascending the ranks rather quickly.
So that's interesting. Obviously, Texas, they can basically get whoever they want. Not whoever they want, but they have a lot of money to spend on a really good coach. Chris Beard is that. And they're basically just, they need an answer for Shaka's disappointment.
This one really surprised me. Because Chris Beard had said that, like, Lubbock, Texas, which is obviously where Texas Tech is located, he called it his home. He said that they were going to build a culture there, that he was never going to, like, leave for Texas. Because there were always rumors about that, especially last year when Shaka was on the hot seat. So this one really surprised me. Obviously, Texas has more money. Money talks. Everyone knows that. But when you call someplace your home and you say that you're going to build up a culture, I don't know. It almost rubs me the wrong way a little bit. Obviously, it's a business decision. He does what's best for him. But, like, it's not like Texas has some incredible, like, basketball program history. Like, in this situation, it's almost just money.
Yeah, it's interesting. And then the rivalry is just going to get even greater.
Oh, the boos when he comes back to Lubbock next year. Going to be insane.
Yep, for sure.
And you mentioned Porter Moser of Loyola. I think he could low-key be a nice fit at Texas Tech. Because it's, like, a bigger program that's had some success in the past, but it's not, like, some absolute blue blood.
For sure.
I could see it happening.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, there's the some coaching news. Like, both those bombshells dropped within a few hours of each other. It's kind of crazy. But then now we'll get into the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 recap. Once again, before we do that, we forgot to shout out at the beginning of the podcast. Make sure to leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy this podcast. I mean, that's just the stuff we really appreciate. We absolutely love it.
But. Yeah, for sure. So without further ado, starting on Saturday, March 27th, the Sweet 16 kicked off with Oregon State taking on Loyola. I believe we all picked Loyola to win this one. And Oregon State goes in there, just absolutely shuts down Loyola's offense. It was a defensive battle the whole game, but ultimately Oregon State just made more shots.
Yeah, you know, in both games that Oregon State had won before that, obviously against Tennessee and then Oklahoma State, Tennessee and Oklahoma State shot the ball just absolutely putrid, like literally 29-30%. And I kind of thought, like, okay, this Oregon State team, I slept on them a bit, but at the same time, you know, I thought that they were maybe getting a little lucky on that side. No. Oregon State's defense was very underrated, and they proved it that game. I mean, the fat guys of Loyola, they never got it going on offense.
Yep. When Loyola shoots 22% from three and 33% from the field, never going to get it done. And credit Ethan Thompson. He's an absolute dog out there.
Yeah, for I was going to say, Ethan Thompson continues to be a beast.
And then moving into the South region, Baylor takes care of Nova after they were down 3 points at half, I believe. Or actually down 7 points at half. So a big comeback there for Baylor. I think we all predicted Baylor to win. Their guards were just too much. Mm-hmm. No Colin Gillespie for Nova really hurts them in this one, especially with the great guards of Baylor.
Yeah, Nova hung around in the first half, as you said. But Baylor ended up winning by double digits despite going 3 of 19 for 3. I mean, that's just the kind of team Baylor is. You know, they can kill you in 10 different ways.
Yep, they have so many guys that can beat you on any given night. And then probably the game of the day, Oral Roberts taking on Arkansas. Back and forth the whole way. Oral Roberts should have pulled it off.
I thought we were going to see a 15 seed in the Elite Eight.
That would have been incredible.
I thought we were going to see it. I mean, for those who didn't watch the game, Max Avesmith of Oral Roberts, I mean, they were down 2 points with about 5-6 seconds left. He got himself a nice look to win. From the wing, from three, he was open enough where you could get a clean shot off, and he has no problem scoring points.
That was as good a look as you could have asked for.
Barely missed.
Given the circumstances.
Barely missed. But you know what? You know, the run's over, but props to Oral Roberts. I mean, they're right up there with the Florida Gulf Coast for Cinderella runs in this tournament. And I thought this, as a team, more impressive than Florida Gulf Coast.
I agree, for sure.
Especially when you consider who they beat. And just for a second, let's talk about Oral Roberts in the future. Assuming that nobody on that team transfers, which they very well could, given the whole like COVID rules of transferring where you get immediate eligibility.
But I don't know why any of them would want to transfer.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know why, but if, like, let's just assume that nobody transfers. Max A. Smith, he's a sophomore. And he averaged 24.5 points that year. And that wasn't just, like, in a mid-major conference, you know, what are they in, Conference USA?
Yep.
That's not just, like, doing it and that and then not being able to hang with the big boys. No, no, no. He was scoring, like, 30 points in March Madness. And O'Banner, their second-best player, he's a junior. So their two best players are coming back next year. They should be a force in Conference
USA.
They
will be returning all their starting five, unless anyone transfers or goes pro, which Asmus might get looked at.
You think so?
He might test the NBA waters.
He'll test, but I see no way that he
stays.
The
only thing is he's a little bit too small.
That's what I was about to say.
But yeah. He is incredibly fast, and he knows how to score.
Yep.
But yeah, credit to Arkansas. Tate played very well. Not a fan of him, but he really stepped up big.
Why aren't you a fan?
I don't know. Like, you watch him out there, he kind of just, like, shit talks all the time. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Mac McClung.
See, that's an absolutely respected move in my book. You know,
but he doesn't have the clutch gene like Mac does.
Okay.
So he
well,
how played
many points
well.
Did he drop that game?
22.
Okay.
I said he played well.
Right.
He basically stepped up for Moses Moody, who was 4 of 20 from the floor.
Yeah.
So, yeah, credit to Arkansas. I just really would have liked to see Oral Roberts make it to the NBA.
I think 99% of America would have. Yeah, that would have been a great story.
True. Then Syracuse gets absolutely destroyed by Houston. Buddy Boeheim got absolutely shut down.
Yeah, Buddy Boeheim. He was on fire the first two rounds, and then that fire just got put out.
They played a whole new defensive team, though. Houston's a phenomenal defensive
team.
Yeah,
still, but, you know, 1-9 from three. Right. I don't care how good of a defense team you are, Buddy's normally doing better than that.
Yep, that's true. And sucks for Syracuse, obviously an 11 seed winning two games. Boeheim did say this was the team he thought was least likely to make a run in the tournament.
Yeah, I mentioned that last episode. That was an interesting quote from Boeheim, because that doesn't seem like something that would inspire confidence in your team, especially when you're going into a Sweet 16 matchup. So,
yeah, but Houston had control of this game for the whole game. Basically, Quentin Grimes had 14, and Marcus Sasser had 12. So, good win for Houston there. And then moving on to Sunday, March 28th, Zags. By 20, almost. They won by 18 against Creighton. Creighton never had a chance.
I mean, the Zags are just too good. Nobody can hang with the Zags this year. And the main criticism of the Zags every year, you know what it is. It's that, oh, they play in the West Coast Conference. They don't play anybody. Well, that's not entirely their fault. Like, you can't, it's not their fault about stuff that they can't control. Like, they're too good. They've been destroying teams all year, not just in their conference, but out of conference.
Yep.
And we told people coming in, like, this Zags team is the best team in the tournament. Whether or not you want to pick them to win at all, it's your prerogative. But way too good. And Drew Timmy, I mean, he's been a beast this tournament.
Absolutely.
He's been better than Kispert in March Madness.
Yeah, but Kispert's still been incredible, shooting like 56% from the floor.
Absolutely.
But yeah, Creighton, it was basically Zag versus the world. Zag played well. I don't really think anyone else from Creighton played very good.
Zag's kind of stepped it up in March Madness. I'll give him that. I was a big Zag critic.
Zag's a dog.
During the regular season, but he stepped it up when he needs to.
Yep. So, good win for the Zags. Kind of saw that one coming. I think everyone did.
Yeah.
Then moving on to a matchup where I think it was more 50-50, but Michigan absolutely destroys FSU 76-58. I think me and you took FSU in this one.
I did not.
Or Michigan in this one.
Yeah.
My bad. And Wesley. Did we mention Wesley wasn't here at the beginning? I don't think we did.
They must have cut on. Normally Wesley,
yeah, for sure.
Normally he chimes in pretty early.
Yeah, unfortunately Wesley cannot be here with us today. He would have been backing up his FSU Seminoles here. But good win for Michigan. They absolutely dominated. Eli Brooks and Hunter Dickinson went to work.
Yeah, let's not forget about Brandon Johns Jr., kind of my guy out there on Michigan. But Florida State, like, I don't know. Me and you have kind of been on the same page with Florida State this year. Like, they're an okay team. Yeah, they're long, they're athletic. Like, I get all that. But they're not that great of a three-point shooting team, or even shooting.
They're an really awful three-point shooting
team. In general. And, like, every year when I'm filling out my bracket, Florida State's always, like, that sexy pick that you can, like, pick the Elite Eight Final Four.
Yeah.
Because they have those intangibles. But I always kind of like the idea of Florida State more than I actually like the way that Florida State plays. So, you know, they just didn't have, like, it this year. Leonard Hampton's still a great coach. Florida State is still a great program, but they stood no chance in that one.
Yeah, Michigan's just the better team, even without Isaiah Livers, as this game proved. And then big upset, UCLA takes down Alabama in overtime. UCLA 88, Alabama 78, UCLA money line. Go Bruins.
Bruins have been making you some money this tournament, haven't they, Absolutely. Alex? I mean, this was an insane game. Was UCLA up at half, or was Bama up at half? I believe Bama was up by like 15 or something at half.
No, UCLA was up.
UCLA
big. They were up 12 at half.
Okay, UCLA was up big at half. But then Bama fought back. I'll give Bama credit.
And it's because Johnny Juzang, he rolled his ankle, he stepped on another guy's foot, missed like 3 minutes, and Bama went on like a 7-0 run to cut the lead to like 4.
Yeah.
So.
But then, obviously, the play that everyone's talking about, Bama sent it to overtime with a buzzer beater from Alex Reese. They inbounded the ball with, I think, 2.6 seconds left.
Yep.
Alex Reese got it past half court. Had a nice look from, like, I don't know, maybe like 7-8 feet beyond the arc. Absolutely drained.
It was a really good look, yeah.
Absolutely drained it. If there was fans there, that would have been a clip for the ages. When Google March Madness highlights, that would be, like, the thumbnail. But, you know, obviously, we know what year we're in right now. And so Bama sent it to OT. I kind of thought they were going to have the momentum going into overtime, no?
No. UCLA full of dogs. That's all I can
Absolutely
say.
UCLA dominated overtime. And all their starters were in double figures. Fun fact.
And they got some good contribution from David Singleton off the bench, who's a really good three-point shooter for them. He had 15. But yeah, I love this UCLA team. Tiger, Juzang, Jaime Jaquez.
So fun to watch.
Really nice, yep.
And that would not be the end of that UCLA team either.
Not at all. And then final game of the night, USC takes care of Oregon, and a dominant performance from USC. A
little battle of the Pac-12 there. Oregon lost, but I do need to shout out Eugene Omorui, brother of Cliff Omorui on Rutgers. I mean, he went off. 28 points, 10 boards, are you kidding me? But when USC shoots 59% from three, as they've kind of been doing this March Madness, it's not going to matter.
Yeah, the key for Oregon against Iowa was take away the three, let Luka Garza get what he wants. And this game, they did not take away the three, and Evan Mobley still played really good. So,
yeah,
recipe for disaster there for Oregon. And USC wins by 14. That wraps up the Sweet 16 games. And then moving into the Elite Eight starting on Monday. Excuse me. Battling a cold here.
Something's going around, that's for sure.
Yep. Houston takes care of Oregon State 67-61. Very close game. Got close at the end. Oregon State pulled off a little comeback, but just came up a little bit short.
Houston was up, I think, the entire game.
They're up 17 at half.
Yeah, but let's give the Beavers credit where credit is due. I mean, they refused to quit. I think they even brought it back to a tie game with like 3 minutes left.
Yep.
But their last 3 minutes, like, awesome. That's some of the worst basketball I've ever seen. They would just take threes, and they'd just pull up, and they just shoot absolute bricks, like hitting, like, the backboard, like, no rim. It's like, what are you doing?
Ethan Thompson also had a couple turnovers down the stretch.
Yeah, speaking of Ethan Thompson, we need to give him his credit. He had an incredible run, you know, up until this game. He was the reason behind a lot of Oregon State's success. But he had a real off night there. And something I noticed about Ethan Thompson's game, he is so reliant on the spin move. When he drives it into the lane, there is an 80% chance that Ethan Thompson is going to do a spin move, whether it works or not. And, you know, it works more than it doesn't, to be honest. But, man, that guy just loves a spin move.
Yeah, but that's also credit to Houston's defense. They did a great job. And their guards, Quinton Grimes, Marcus Hasker, stepped up big scoring-wise. And then Jarreau filled the stat sheet.
As he always
does. He always does. Yeah. Yep. Good win for Houston. I know Wesley was really happy with that
And one. Let's just talk about Houston for a little bit. You know, they're in the Final Four. Congrats to Houston. You know, we use this term a little loosely here, but some are saying Mickey Mouse run. I mean, they played only double-digit seeds on their road to the Final Four. First time that's ever happened.
Yep.
In addition to being absolutely gifted a game by the refs versus Rutgers.
Nah. I wouldn't say that.
So, like, you know, does this Houston team deserve? No, I'm kidding. Obviously, Houston deserves everything they've got. They're a team full of dogs out there.
Yep.
But I want to shout out one person in particular, and it's not a player. That's their coach, Kelvin Sampson. In 2008, he got a 5-year ban from the NCAA, not for paying players money like coaches do all the time, not for illegal recruiting, I guess, actually, technically, but it was literally for making too many phone calls to players.
Wow.
Not giving them money, not doing anything like that you would think would be legal, literally for making too many phone calls. The NCAA brought down the hammer on Kelvin Sampson for no reason. They just wanted to make an example of him. People thought he'd never coach again. What did he do? He went to Houston when Houston had nothing. When Kelvin Sampson got to Houston, I kid you not, there were articles written about there being rats in the gym. And now they're in the Final Four because of him. So bravo to Kelvin Sampson. What a job he's done there.
Turn that program around. Bless you. And then moving into the second game of the night, Baylor takes care of Arkansas 81-72. Baylor got out to an early lead. Arkansas tried to reel him in, but ultimately not enough. Moses Moody, probably the best player on Arkansas, what do you say?
I would say
him or maybe Justin Smith, but he didn't do anything. Moses Moody, 2-10 again, so he struggled in the tournament.
He did.
And Baylor's guards, too much yet again.
Baylor started off so hot. Didn't they have like 30 points in the first 10 minutes?
Yeah, it was very high scoring.
It's really. Arkansas, that's tough to come back from, you know?
Especially when JD Notae, who was the spark that brought them back into it somewhat, he fouls out with 14 minutes left in the game.
Yeah.
You know, I blame that partially on the player because his fifth foul was an offensive foul. He picked up the charge. But I also blame Musselman a little bit for not attempting to get him
and
up.
This is where I disagree with you. Yes, I blame Musselman for not getting him out, but it's one of those situations where, like, if you're Arkansas, you know you're playing Baylor. And let's be real, Arkansas knows that Baylor is the better team. They're a team full of 8 starters, which I'll get into in a second. Sure, he's in foul trouble, but if you take him out, you're most likely going to go down no matter what. So at least go out swinging, I guess, the mentality. Go out there with your best set of players, and if they fall out, they fall out, but don't have them on the bench for an unnecessary amount of time. You know, so I understand his mindset. I get where you're upset because 14 minutes left is a lot. That's almost half the game. So I know where you're coming from, but I also know where Musselman's coming from.
I guess we'd be two different coaches. Once Notae picks up that fourth foul,
one of us would be winning titles.
He's sitting until the under 8. Well, clearly they didn't win.
I'm not saying I would have played him then, but I want to wait till the under 8. That's 6 minutes.
Yeah.
Hey, man, you'd get upset by a lot of 14 seeds in the tournament.
Absolutely not.
But as far as Baylor's concerned, we've said it before, but I'm just going to reiterate. They literally have 8 starters. There are 3 bench players that play significant minutes. Everyday John, Flagler, and Mayer. They're so good. They'll start on 99.9% of teams in the nation. They're that good. They're that deep.
Yep, very deep team and also incredibly well coached. So they were the second team to punch their ticket to the Final Four. And then moving on, Gonzaga absolutely destroys USC in a game which I thought was going to be pretty close.
I did not think it was going to be close. I kind of knew that was a bad call on your end to begin with. Because, yeah, sure, USC has been shooting really good this tournament. But I'm sorry, you can't just shoot like 55% from 3 and just expect that to continue. That's not a sustainable rate. What was the line in this game? Like Zags like -7?
I think Zags like 8.5.
That's the easiest cover in your life. If you didn't bet that, then you're just brain dead.
That's fair.
Zags won by 19. Let's be real. They could have won by a lot more if they wanted to.
Yep.
They just didn't need to.
They held the ball for the final like 4 or 5 minutes. Props to Zags. Hit on the under. Respect.
Ooh, a little backdoor under there.
Yes, sir. So, respect to the Zags. And their defense was really impressive this game. They were putting a lot of pressure on the ball, forced a good amount of turnovers, and their guards for USC just looked so out of sorts.
Yes. So, that would be another one seed in our Final Four. So, up until that point, you know, despite all the craziness in the first 2 rounds of March Madness, the Final Four was 2 seed, 1 seed, 1 seed. So it was shaping up to be a little chalky. People were starting to get, or I heard some chirps about it being a little chalky, but as we'll see.
Yep, and then the final game of the Elite Eight, UCLA takes down Michigan 51-49, solidifying themselves with the best run in the tournament, first 4 to Final Four.
An absolute rock fight of a game.
Yep.
A race to 50. Like, are you kidding me?
I mean, Johnny Juzang, he just is that dude. 28 out of their 51 points.
That's over half the team's points.
Single-handedly carried them.
And let's not forget, Johnny Juzang, I believe he re-injured his ankle in that game, and he missed a little bit of time. Or am I mixing up games?
Maybe it was in the Michigan
game. It was in the Michigan game. I'd be willing to put money on it.
Yes, you are correct.
So he re-injured his ankle for like the 80th time in this tournament and missed about 3-4 minutes. Still scored over his half the team's points. I mean, he just could not miss out there.
Yep. Also, Tiger played pretty well. It doesn't show up on the stat sheet, really, but I thought he controlled the game really nice.
Oh, he always does.
And he destroyed Mike Smith out there. Mike Smith was awful for Michigan.
Yep. Think about this. Michigan's last field goal made was with 5 minutes and 23 seconds left.
That's
And it was a three. Wild. It was a three by Shondae Brown, who was promptly taken out of the game. So it's like, Michigan, if you can get nothing going on offense, why are you taking out Shondae Brown, who it was one of the few guys who was making shots?
And yeah, UCLA, they hit a free throw down the stretch to go up 2, and Michigan had a good look. I believe there was like 7.6 seconds left on the clock. Mike Smith got a decent look at 3 for probably the win, but I don't think Mike Smith is the guy you want really taking the shot.
When we were watching that game, and there was 7.2 seconds left, and Michigan was down 1, or was it 2?
2.
2, okay. We were like ranking the players that we would want taking the shots on Michigan. I think Mike Smith maybe fell like second to last.
Yep.
And yet he took the ball up the entire court and chucked up a 3. It made no sense.
I think Eli Brooks 100% should have gotten that last shot.
Yeah. And you can argue Franz as well, but at the same time, I was just going to mention it. Franz airballed a 3 with like a minute and a half left, and he was about as wide open as you can
get. He was 1 of 10 from the floor.
Yeah. It wasn't just the airball. He struggled all around.
Yep, but then after that, Mike Smith missed 3-pointer. Ball was tipped out of bounds off UCLA. And honestly, Michigan got a decent look with like 0.7 seconds left. Franz was fading away from the basket a little bit, and there was somewhat of a contest, but I think it was a decent look, and he came up just short.
I mean, with less than a second left, that's about as good of a look as you'll get. And you were sweating with UCLA moneyline. Yep. How much money did you make in that weekend?
2 bets, $83.
Wow.
So, respect to the Bruins. They came through twice when I bet on them. So
let's shout out Mick Cronin. Second year at UCLA, and he goes to the Final Four.
Yep. And people were questioning that hire so much. Coming from Cincinnati, having no California roots, and he just Final Four run.
If you've ever watched a Mick Cronin Cincinnati team, you would have never questioned that hire. Like, I don't think any of us questioned that. We always thought he was an underrated coach. His Cincinnati teams, they had, like, that blue-collar work ethic.
Great defensive team.
They'll hound you. And that's what UCLA looked like in that game. It looked like one of his Cincinnati teams.
Yeah, and I would normally say this UCLA team this season has not been that good of a defensive team, more of an offensive team. But this game, brought out Mick Cronin's Cincinnati roots. They clamped down on the defensive end, so credit UCLA.
The only thing I don't understand about Mick Cronin and the Cronin family is that they show his dad,
Hep
Cronin, I mean, we even know his name, on TV like 10 times a game.
Yep.
They don't do that for any other coach. I've never seen this happen. Now, maybe if their dad...
Maybe they'll show him a couple times.
What? Even still, maybe if like a coach's dad was like some really important member in the basketball community. But Hep Cronin's just a guy. It's not like Hep Cronin is like an NBA Hall of Famer or was a coach himself. No. He's literally just Mick Cronin's dad. And then they show him like 10 times a game. It's absolutely bananas. If you've watched a UCLA game in March Madness, you know exactly what we're talking about. But good for Mick Cronin. Good for Hep. I'm sure he's happy to have them in the Final Four. But I just don't get it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he did coach at LaSalle for a little bit, but still not a great program by any means.
The LaSalle Explorers.
Yep, so that wraps up the Final Four. Just to recap, we got Gonzaga, Baylor, 2-1 seeds, and then Houston at the 2 line, and UCLA being an 11 seed. Should be a nice Final Four.
I mean, the Zags have had a fairly easy run thus far, and obviously UCLA is way better than 11 seed. They have shown that throughout this entire tournament. But it has to be said, they are playing an 11 seed in the Final Four, the Zags. I believe right now they're 14-point favorites.
Yep, Zags 14-point favorites. They've only lost one game by single digits this year, or only won one game by single digits. Everything else has been double digits. So it's an interesting line. Also, Baylor is a 5-point favorite. I'm hammering Baylor in that one, if I'm being completely honest.
I would as well. The Zags is a little more confusing.
Yeah, Zags minus 14. I don't know. I think I like Zags in this one. I love UCLA. Don't get me wrong. After they knocked off my Cougs, they did make me some money, so respect
to you might UCLA. Have to go UCLA Moneyline again in that one.
Oh, that would pay out quite well.
I mean, 14-point favorites? Come on. But that's that's the biggest line in a Final Four game of all time, and I think it's not even close.
That's fair, though. It's very fair.
You can't disagree with it the way the Zags
I just playing. Don't think UCLA has nearly enough firepower to win the game. I don't really see any chance of them winning.
Even if Ju Zhang plays like he did.
And the thing is I wouldn't say UCLA is necessarily a great defensive team, and I just think compared to Gonzaga, they are way slower.
Yeah.
Like, Jaime Jaquez, great player, but his foot speed's just not really there, and he's probably going to get matched up against Kispert.
Kispert's getting destroyed. And Gonzaga's a team that can beat you in a million ways.
Yep.
You're going to, beat him down, you're going to be big down low, that's fine, they get you threes.
First off, you can double-team Timmy. If you don't, easy bucket. If not, well, he's kicking it because he's an elite passer.
Exactly.
And then Suggs is obviously going to be a hard guard. I like the matchup between Nembhard and Tiger Campbell. Those are two players I really enjoy watching.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, but we're going to see Gonzaga in the finals, right? I think so. I think there's maybe a 10% chance UCLA wins.
I'm pulling for the Bruins, though. I can't emphasize that enough. I go Bruins.
I'm pulling for the Bruins. But the only reason I can kind of understand someone not pulling for the Bruins is if they want to see a Gonzaga versus Baylor national championship game. Because you can't argue that that wouldn't be
election. Because that's been the talk since second week of college basketball was Baylor's ex.
And one other storyline to follow in the UCLA versus Gonzaga game, little history throwback here for those who remember, 2005, the Adam Morrison crying game when UCLA beat Gonzaga. Gonzaga absolutely choked that game, by the way. Yep. They literally threw it to UCLA. Adam Morrison was crying, so a little revenge game possibly for the Zags.
Yep, we shall see. And then moving into the second matchup, which is actually the earlier matchup, just we're talking about it second. Baylor-Houston, some nice backcourts in this one. I would say Houston's a very defensive-minded team. Baylor does a little bit of everything. So it's going to be a backcourt-led game. We'll see which backcourt can get it done.
I got Baylor, though, because Houston, yes, they're a very good defensive team, but Baylor can hit from anywhere. They're such a good shooting team. Probably the best three-point shooting team in the nation, I would say.
And I would say Houston's not a very deep team. They bring Tremont Markin off the bench, but when Baylor's rotating in five guards constantly, it's tough to keep up that defensive intensity. I think Jarreau's probably going to guard Jared Butler. Maybe Davion Mitchell. I'm not sure. They might be switching.
It'd probably have to be Jared Butler.
I think it's Davion.
Really?
I think it's Davion. Okay. But we'll see. Yeah, I think for Houston to win, I think Grimes needs to drop 20-plus, sure.
And he needs to be efficient as well.
Yes, I agree. But yeah, the Final Four is set.
Yeah.
I'm going with Baylor and Zags.
It's lame, but I'm going with Baylor and Zags as well. And I'll be cheering for UCLA and Baylor.
Yep.
I should be cheering for Houston. I love Kelvin Sampson, but after what they did to my Rutgers Scarlet Knights, I can't. My heart won't let me. I hope Baylor just demolishes them, obliterates them.
Yep.
Shout out to the person who trolled me on Twitter. When Houston got to the Final Four, they sent a gif of somebody holding up four fingers and they added Nate March. So I felt like that was definitely a troll at me, but we'll see.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
Yep.
I've heard mixed opinions. What are your thoughts on this Final Four? Some people are like, this is one of the best Final Fours in recent memory. Some people are like, this is one of the worst. I think it's more middle of the road.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. We'll see what kind of magic happens. I think the UCLA run's incredible. Obviously, a first four team to make the Final Four has only happened one other time, I believe.
Shout out Shaka Smart, your new coach.
VCU. So, yeah, I think it, middle of the road. I'm excited, though. Very excited.
I think the national championship game has potential to be one of the best. If it is Zags versus Baylor. Absolutely. And let's just do a little sneak peek preview. If it is Zags Baylor, I know we say Zags by 40. I know we say Zags are everything, and they are. Baylor could be a team that could beat the Zags. I could see a world where Baylor would beat the Zags.
I'd pick Baylor.
I probably would as well.
Well, it depends on how these teams look in these Final Four games. I just think what I've seen from Baylor so far.
What could Baylor show you that would, make them not want to pick? Not, against Zags, but at least, let's say the line's, Zags -4 against Baylor. That's Baylor all day for me.
I like Baylor to win win outright.
Outright? Little money line? Yeah. We'll see.
It's just the way their bench has been playing. Mayer, Flag, Lur. Like, they've been playing so good. I like Baylor.
Everyday John. Yeah, it'll be fun to watch. I can't wait for these Final Four games. You know, getting better and better as it goes on. Unless you have anything else to add.
Let me just throw out a long shot there. I don't know about you guys, our loyal listeners, but do you guys like the CBS, like, reporters after? Like, Charles Barkley, who else is on there? Kenny Smith, Andy Katz. I don't know. I just feel like that's kind of like...
You don't like them?
Our four of us, like, we should be there.
Absolutely.
Like, obviously a little bit down the road, but I feel like we could get there one day.
Yeah, Rome wasn't built in a day. You know, I'm not saying that we should be on there now. Brick by brick, you know, as we always say. But, you know, when Kenny the Jet Smith and, like, Charles Barkley and all them pretend to know college basketball.
Like, they can't even pronounce names.
When they pretend to know college basketball for 1 month a year, it's like, you know, I get a little bit embarrassed. Like, oh, come on, guys. Like, what are you doing out there? Like, Charles Barkley, I love you. No one's a bigger fan. But I don't know. I feel like we could do a better job. I 100% know what you're saying. That day, you know, while it may come, it is not here now. So we will be back recording another episode after the Final Four games, of course.
For sure.
And until next time, this is Mid-March.